The next portion of our class, we've talked about short sales. We'll stay here as long as we need today to answer any of the questions that you have. But let's get on, and I want you to take on a different hat for a second. I want you to take on the hat of a real estate investor. If you never intend on buying property as an investor, that's fine. But hopefully, this course is to teach you how to make more sales with short sales and foreclosures, okay? And hopefully, you can be working with investors. So I want you to get in their mind just for a little bit. Help yourself become a real estate investor. And when I invest in property, I want to tell you what I'm looking for. This is exactly how I do it. This is what I do when I'm looking and evaluating properties. Here's what I do. I'm looking for a property with existing value. I want it to have equity in the property, right? The difference between the market value and the debt on the property. That's what I'm looking for. Or, now, am I finding this right now? Probably not as much. Why? Because of the refinancing boom, right? Everybody and their mama refinance. So here's more of what I'm finding in my investment analysis today. I'm finding properties where I can easily create value by doing some minor cosmetic repairs. Now let me ask you a question. What am I talking about when I say minor cosmetic repairs? Carpet and paint. Exactly. What else? Appliances, maybe updating the stove or something. Yeah, I'm looking for simple stuff. I am not looking to rebuild a house. Now, carpet and paint in every house. Every house I go to, I paint it. Why do I paint a house even if the walls look good? Somebody said it. It smells good. Right? I'm telling y'all, the best thing that you can smell when you go into a house is a dog or cat.
Yes.
If you're an investor. When I go in and I smell the remains of Fluffy or Fido, I just go, money come, money come. Because I know and realize that everybody else that's gone to that house has pretty much gone, ooh. That's when I take my wife in. Oh my God! What died in here? And if there is something that's dead in there, you know, that's good too. Trust me, I've had it happen. I mean, it's terrible to say, but you can get a smell out. And I always put new carpet in. Not only does new carpet smell good, but man, it looks good, it smells good, don't it? It just feels good. Did y'all notice the carpet in the hotel rooms, or was it just me? My feet felt so good on it last night. I ain't lying. Beth and Abby was laying in the bed, and I was just walking on the floor. She said, what did you do? I was just walking on. I said, that feels good, that carpet did. I loved it. New carpet. Ain't been there long. All right? So that's what I'm looking for. Also, a lot of times when I teach my class in Atlanta, people laugh at me. But I generally look for properties to invest in, residential properties, that are less than $125,000. Now, here's a big, humongous question. Why do I look at properties $125,000 and less? People can afford them what? Cash flow. If I'm not selling the house and I'm keeping the house, I can rent it out. And chances get a break-even cash flow, or perhaps I can make a little profit on a monthly basis, right? Now, what if I buy a $250,000 house? Can I rent it out and get a positive cash flow? Chances are no. So, and in today's environment, this is important. I mean, as an investor, I can't buy a $250,000 house to hold. I'm not going to cash flow off of it. So I'm generally looking for properties under $125,000. And I want a middle class, salt of the earth neighborhood. I'm talking about just where the good old people live. I don't want neighborhoods where people run around in their little tight shorts and play tennis all day. All right, that's not the neighborhood I'm looking for. I want to look for a neighborhood where people get up in the morning and they work by 9 o'clock and they're home by 5 o'clock and they're playing in the yard in the evening. That's generally where I'm looking. I want the worst home in the best neighborhood. Y'all, this is simple and I'll tell you about it. I live kind of in a little historic district, you know, with a bunch of old houses. My house was built the year the Titanic went down. You know, and Beth kind of sometimes wishes, she wishes our Titanic would go down. It's so old, you know, it's just an old house. And, you know, you can't even have trouble with old house. But in this historic district, we found a house that was going into foreclosure. And this is the littlest house on the street. And it was just kind of run down, but I said, man, this has potential. And so guess what we did? We bought the house pre-foreclosure for like $46,000 in our neighborhood and got a wonderful deal on it. Let me tell you what it afforded me the opportunity to do. My mother was in a bad situation in her life and some things that were going on in it. She actually was in a dangerous situation. And I was able to move her out and move her across the road from me in this cute little cottage that's a two-bedroom, one-bath, cute house as a button now. I'm telling you, good. And why is that? It's the worst house, best neighborhood. Why is that good? What am I looking for? What happens to the value of her house because everything around it is these big old huge houses? That's right. The value of her house will go up because of everything around it. So I'm looking for that worst house in the best neighborhood. Trust me when I say this. Never buy the best house in the worst neighborhood. Been there, done that. There's a gated community type thing in, there's a gated community in Villa Rica called Fairfield Plantation. It's up there, you know. And we bought this beautiful brick house for $124,000. I'm telling you, it was beautiful. Three bedroom, two bath, looked good on the inside. We didn't have to do much. I put all stainless steel appliances in there, did a wonderful job on it. There's one problem with the property. The house right beside it. And the house right beside it had a dog pen in the front yard. And the dog pen was as big as two of these tables put together. The dog pen wouldn't have been so bad. But then there was the dog. Honestly, he was as big as I was. Cujo looking thing. I mean, just a mean, vicious thing. And the house looked horrible. Anyway, they had this little string out on the property where he could run. You know, you see them tied to a tree and stuff, and they had these strings all over the place. It was like a maze. I mean, he could go from this one to the, I mean, he was all over the place. And I saw since they had that string, I said, and the pen looked bad. I went over there and said, hey, man, I love you, dog pen. Can I buy it? And I bought it for $100, gave it to the landscaper, traded in on some landscaping on the property because he had a big dog. But guess what? The dog remained. So every time somebody would come and see my house at 1388/1389 Northgate Drive in Villa Rica, and I say that because it was the strangest thing. You'd have to show them your identification or your card before you go in, you know. And they say, what property are you here on? Well, I'm here on 1388 Northgate Drive. I'm sorry, I don't have a 1388 Northgate. Okay, well, look under 1389 Northgate Drive. Okay, I have 1389 Northgate Drive. I go back the next day and say, I'm here on 1389 Northgate Drive. I'm sorry, we don't have a 1389 Northgate Drive. Okay, I'm here on 1388 Northgate Drive. Oh, well, sure, come on in. It was the strangest thing. The house had two addresses. I mean, it's the weirdest thing. I don't know how that happened. I mean, I tell people where to come to, you know, like contractors and stuff, and I say, you have to give them two addresses, and I just don't know which one it is. But I forgot that I had the best house. But it was in the had the bad house beside it. It totally destroyed my house. The only house since 1996 that I have bought and sold at a loss and killed me, like to have killed me. I'm looking for a real dog. I was the idiot. You know what I should have been doing? I should have bought the house with the dog. That's the house I should have been going after instead of the big brick house, okay? Now, I want to show you a house that I evaluated, because when we're talking about foreclosures, this is a typical house, I think, that you will see. We did not actually purchase this property, but I have owned 3 properties in this subdivision, and this is why this one interested me. This one is down on the corner, and let me tell you something about it. The reason that I didn't buy it was this. Something about a house, I like the floors to be level.
How dare
you? Call me funny, right? If I had laid down in the floor, I would have rolled out the other wall. You see what I'm saying? I mean, I would have picked up speed. I'm telling you, and I would have bust right through the wall. I could imagine my little 3-year-old on a tricycle. Here, baby, try the tricycle. Where'd Abby go? She gone. But this is a typical house, I would think. And I just want to show you some pictures of it. If I bought this house, are there some minor cosmetic things that I could do to it? Of course. I'd probably take that bush out, right? Covering up the house. Look at this. You probably can't tell from the picture. It's a little light, but there's mud up on the house. Look at those shutters. It just looks bad. Look at that right there. Oh, man, it's all rusted. The gutters are terrible. This was the carport. Believe it or not, a baby actually lived there. Look, it's a high chair. That's out to the side of the house, y'all. Can I be honest with y'all? I almost took that cooler home. Man, where I'm from, you can use a good cooler every now and then. You know, that's a nice cooler. And who in their right mind would leave a perfectly good tire there? You know, you can plant pansies in those things. This was the backyard. If you don't have a trash can, you know, just kind of toss it out there. Let me tell you the wonderful thing about this property, though, okay? The outside here, look, you got a baby pen where the baby can play. You got a lamp outside. Everybody needs one of them. But I'm about to show you the best feature of the house. Now, as an agent, do you know how sometimes how you look in all the little real estate publications and books that we advertise, lovely cottage or, you know, just adorable this. On this one, you could have put mother-in-law suite. Y'all, when I was prowling around this house, I went in the back and I saw this thing and I almost ducked down like this, afraid a sniper was going to pop me. I mean, it looked like a sniper hut or something. I don't know what that was. Mother-in-law suite. Here was the kitchen. Ladies and gentlemen, there was a bottle of Lysol there. I can promise you it had not been used. This was the dining room. The only thing I thought about wearing at the time was the helmet. You can use a good helmet time to time in a house like that. I like that. Man, that is awesome. You a bike rider?
Yes.
Tricycle?
It's a scooter.
I got a motorcycle license too. When I moved to Georgia from Alabama, I never forget, in Alabama, you ain't got a separate thing as a motorcycle license. I mean, whatever you drive is what you drive. And I came over to Georgia and I felt good. Now, getting my driver's license, they looked at me and they said, Mr. Gaines, would you like a motorcycle license? I said, what you talking about? She said, well, coming over from Alabama, all you got to do is say yes. And she said, if you say no now and you ever want to ride a motorcycle, said, you're going to have to be tested. So guess what? I got me a motorcycle license. I mean, you may go biking a little bit later. Look like, you know, bad thing with me on a motorcycle, look like I'm wearing a piece of dental floss, you know? good thing about this house is it had a home office. I mean, you got to use your imagination, don't you? I mean, this was a real doozy, was it not? All right. Is it possible? Now, you've got investor hat on now. Is it possible to locate a foreclosure property before it's advertised in the newspaper?
Yes.
And how? Okay. Now, I need to let you be aware of something. If you're a real estate investor, there are a lot of services out there that sell their wares and goods and will tell you that it is possible for them to send you a list of these properties before they're listed for foreclosure. That is true in some states. That is not true in Georgia. Save your money. There's no way that you can find out other than word of mouth from other people and advertising efforts, okay? Your advertising efforts is what gets this. Have you ever seen any of those people that ride around in the yellow vehicles with the red letters that says, I buy houses and I buy foreclosures and lose your house, all that stuff? I just think it's a little tacky myself, but that's fine if you want to do it. But that's not how I do it. But I do get my name out there. I may put something in the paper. You can advertise. You can, if you're working with homeowners that are doing short sales, you need to say, facing foreclosure, maybe I can help. You see what I'm saying? Do you say, facing foreclosure, I'll help? Or, you know, be careful when you advertise. You don't want to promise something you can't do, okay? You got to be honest and truthful in everything you do. But, hey, maybe we'll have an option for you. So you advertise to these people. Perhaps you see an area that you're interested in. You've heard that there's several houses going for foreclosure in there. Can you do a mail out to a subdivision or to an area or to a zip code? Sure you can. So there's ways to locate these people, but you have to dig them out and they have to find you. Now, occasionally, I go to Marietta. All right, I get off on the Marietta. Hey, who's been to Marietta lately? Anybody in here? All right. Well, when I get off the interstate in Marietta, all I see, they're planted like little tulips or something, is these signs. And I'm telling you, there's hundreds of them out there. And every one of them says, I buy houses. I had tons of them. So I got me one and stuck it out and it says, me too. All right. It's advertised in the paper. Okay. I'm going to tell you the items that I look for and I actually write down on a piece of notebook paper. I note the date of the mortgage. Remember I told you that's very important, right? I do the amount of debt. What if it says original indebtedness in the amount of $10 million? Right? That doesn't fit my investment criteria. It's not what I'm looking for. I note the property address. I write down the borrower's name, the deed book and page of that security deed because I got a little bit of title work to do. I write down the lender name and the attorney information. Their name, phone, file number, website, in case I need to contact them. Now let's look at the property that I just showed you. Y'all, I have bought three houses in that neighborhood and have sold them between $85,000 and $100,000. The reason that this one looked good to me is, first of all, the mortgage was in 2005. Take note, the older the indebtedness, the better. Why? They will have paid down on it, right? They will have paid it down. 2005, not so good, right? It's probably still about what they borrowed. They paid very little principal. But the debt was $59,500. I told you, I've sold houses for $85,000 to $100,000 in this neighborhood. But then I found out all the construction and the problems that were with the house, up under the house, and I said, I don't want to touch it. The property address was 295 Henson Circle. The owners were Walter L. Belzer, Lisa, but please, God, tell me nobody in here's last name is Belzer and knows these people. That always freaks me out. It was in deed book and page 3319-100, and the lender was Mortgage Electronic Registration System, and the attorney was McCall Raymer. And their website is foreclosurehotline.net. You might want to write that down if you're looking at foreclosures. I would say McCall & Raymer probably handles over half of the foreclosure sales as a law firm in the state of Georgia. They handle an incredible amount of them. And they have a listing of their properties on there, not their properties, but properties that they're actually doing the foreclosure on, listed on their website. Okay? The internet is where I do my online research. Do y'all remember when that just horrible incident happened at the Fulton County Courthouse with that guy that killed the... Yeah, it was just horrible. And since then, it has been horrible getting into our local courthouse. And you may have noticed that as well. It's like going through Fort Knox. I'm telling y'all, if y'all bring a pair of nail clippers into the Carroll County Courthouse, they will have me up against the wall and frisk me. I mean, it's that. So I try to avoid going to the courthouse at all costs. But I do online county property record searches. And in our county, that service is provided by a company called QPublic. And you can go to QPublic.net and see if your county uses this service. If they do, wonderful. If your county tax assessor does not use this service, I would call them and let them know what a wonderful service this is. Y'all, I cannot tell you the amount of information that I can get. I can get the last sale information. I can get the, what the assessor thinks the market value of the property is. I can actually look at an aerial view of the property in Carroll County. I mean, so much information is available on the net. If you don't know who your county assessor's website is, you can go to this site, gaassessors.com, and you'll be able to pull up your local county and their website and see the information that you can get there. How many of you are aware of the Georgia Online Deed and Lien Index? Raise your hand. There are some that are not. This is the most wonderful thing. You can pull up an actual scanned image of warranty deeds and security deeds. All of that information that is filed within the deed books, okay, you can pull up. This service is inexpensive. It is $9.95 a month. I carry about 8 subscriptions to it. We sometimes teach people how to go in and do research, and we pull all the deeds up. And this is a wonderful, wonderful thing. Guys, how many of you hate going to pull plat maps? You hate going to the courthouse to do that? Do you realize in many instances you can pull those same plats out of this and print them off on your own computer? Fantastic. Okay? You can save that image on your computer, whatever you need to do. This is worth your $10. If you want to subscribe to it, it's not a long-term thing. You can do it today and cancel it tomorrow, right? You don't have to keep it on and on and on. All right, gscca.org. Now let's talk about at the steps. We've talked a lot about buying property pre-foreclosure. We've talked about the short sale option. Now I want to talk about the actual foreclosure option. It's the first Tuesday of every month, between the hours of 10 o'clock and 4 o'clock. Sometimes you will not know what time, you know, the attorney's going to be there. Oftentimes they won't tell you, and sometimes you'll have to wait the entire day. You will have to bring cash or certified funds in the full amount of your bid if you're buying on the courthouse steps. Remember, I told you I didn't have it. That attorney was, Alan was very nice to let me go and to get the money, but they're certainly buying. Don't get up there and if they say, you say, oh, I got it, and they say, we can't let you do it, and you say, well, y'all let Bobby Gaines do it. Please don't do that, okay?
Huh? That has to be made out to the county or to yourself?
I make it out to myself, sign it on the back. That's the way you do it. Make it out to yourself. Remember, at the courthouse steps, all junior liens are wiped off the property, except for IRS liens and property tax liens. Okay? Those are two liens that are not wiped off the property. And there's no right of redemption in the state of Georgia. Do you realize in Alabama that there is? Do you realize that if a property sells at the foreclosure steps in the state of Alabama, the homeowner has a year to come back and get the property? Do they most of the time do that?
No.
No, they don't have an ability to. But for one solid year,
the purchaser has to worry. Now, what about if the bank takes it back and sells it through a real estate agent? Guess what? That right of redemption still carries for that full year. Okay? In the state of Georgia, we don't have that. If you don't pay, you don't stay. You're out of there. And normally, they're going to give you 30 days to deed. 30 days to the deed. All right? 30 days, and they're going to give you a deed. Now, they used to give you a deed like really, really soon. But now it's the McCollum-Raymer Relief Act that they enacted that gives them, the McCollum-Raymer Relief Act gives them 30 days to get a deed. Why? What if that person filed bankruptcy an hour before the foreclosure sale? Is the foreclosure valid? No, the foreclosure is not valid. At the steps, I think it's more competition. How many of y'all like going and just rolling the dice every now and then? Anybody in here that admit that? Okay, this, y'all, is fun. It is addictive. If you are one of them that likes to go to the casino, you better stay away from it. It's fun, okay? Going to the courthouse steps. How many of y'all have actually attended an auction? Okay, a lot of you. It's amazing. I love it. It's almost a revival-like atmosphere. It's a revival-like atmosphere, and you got to be careful not to overbid. Let me tell you, give you a story. How many of y'all like to eBay? I love to eBay. And do you realize, huh?
I'm the queen.
You the eBay queen? Well, I love to get on there, and my problem comes in on eBay is when I bid on something. Because I am extraordinarily competitive. And I want to win.
You don't bid till the last 30 seconds.
I spent $70 on a Grease CD. I get carried away. And you can get carried away at a foreclosure auction. So be careful. You got to know the maximum amount of your bid. You might waste the entire day waiting to bid. Sometimes I have been there from 10 in the morning to 4 at night and not been able to buy a property. It may not sell, may not even come up. And you've got to get comfortable. Let me tell you what I do. I used to love to go to the 4th of July stuff and everything. You see everybody carrying those little lawn chairs. You know what I'm talking about? And now they got those bag chairs. How many of you like the bag chairs? Well, the first bag chairs that come out were like an airplane seat. And after I would sit down in the little bag chair, I would basically be wearing the bag chair. And finally, Sam's came out with a big man bag chair. Huh? I'm talking about nice. Now, I'm telling you the thing is this wide. And I bought the thing, and it's got a big old cup holder. It ain't got one that holds a can or one of these little bottles like y'all's water bottles. I'm telling you, it'll hold a big gulp from 7-Eleven. You know what I'm talking about, the big one? And I take that chair out, and I sit there on the steps of the county courthouse with me, a big gulp drink. I mean, we asked the clerk of Superior Court if we could grill hot dogs out there. He turned us down. So I just bring my own hot dogs already cooked. You know, you got to bring it there. Or you send somebody to get you some food, but you'll be there, might be there the entire day. Realize that most properties or many properties will not sell at the auction. Okay? They're not going to sell. Because the buyer may, or the homeowner may refinance. They may get a loan from somebody. They may sell it prior to foreclosure. One of you wonderful agents may have helped them with a short sale. Or they may win the Georgia lottery and go to Po' Folks. This is our local courthouse at 10 a.m. when the bidding initially begins. As you see here, there's an attorney up here somewhere, and he's calling something out, and you see all these people gathering around. And I mean, they're running around going, what are you doing? What are you? I mean, people, it's just chaos. Some people over here talking. This woman over here, you can't tell, she is smoking something that looks funny. I don't know, it's a little bitty, I don't know what that is, but we got all kind of stuff going on at 10 a.m. Revival-like atmosphere. You may have 30, 40 people there, depending on what county you're in. At 12 o'clock, it's a ghost town. Ain't nobody there at noon. Most everybody's gone. Because most of the people there are what? Novices. They don't know what they're doing. They're like I was back in 1996 trying to figure out the foreclosure game. I'm going to give you some tips for bidding. You need to be confident in your research. Get comfortable because it might be a day of it. If it's January 4th, it might be cold. Call the attorney's office if the property is selling. Keep in mind that often they're not going to tell you. Okay? They won't tell you anything. McCall or Raymer will barely talk to you. So you might want to go to their website, foreclosurehotline.net. The attorney will make an opening bid on behalf of the lender. And the amount of the bid is the total debt plus late fees, attorney's fees, tax, tag, title, whatever. I mean, anything they can put on there, they're going to put on there. Late fees, penalties, all of that. It is a competitive bid. There is no chilling. You cannot go there and receive money to go away. Do you realize that happens? And it is illegal. In other words, people will be bidding there, and if they know you're there to bid, and they're like, wow, I want to get that property. People will always come up to me and say, Bobby, what are you here to bid on? Let me give you a good comeback. It would be easier to tell you what I'm not bidding on. Alright? It just shuts them up. Just some little thing. So it's easier to tell you what I'm not bidding on. So they'll ask what you bid on. A lot of the guys, I'll tell them. I'll tell them and they know to bid on it. But don't accept money and don't offer money. I have known instances where up to $5,000 was paid for someone to go away. That is illegal. Do not participate in it. It needs to be a competitive bid. Alright? If at all possible, and this is difficult with some insurance companies, but if at all possible, if you know you're bidding, I would call the insurance agent and get them set up to get a binder on the property. Can you imagine going to the sale at 10 o'clock and at 9 o'clock that morning, your little house you were going to purchase went up in a flame of smoke and was burnt. And I'm serious, you need to drive by that morning. It might be a good idea to call the local fire department in the area and say, has there been a fire? Now, after I got an insurance insurance binder on it and I got insurance on it, burn, baby, burn. Right? That's fine. All right, but insurance binder prior to the bid, you're going to get a deed in 30 days. Remember, all junior liens are wiped out. And you need to know your maximum bid prior to going to the auction. Here's how you determine it. You figure up what the property is going to be worth after all repairs have been made. Okay? After all repairs have been made, what is this property going to be worth? Then you take out the amount for repairs that you're going to have to make on it. You take out carrying costs such as what? Interest on the money, right? You take out interest on the money. Less your selling costs. What are your selling costs? Commissions, right? Less your profit margin. What is your profit margin? I would suggest to you having a profit margin of $10,000 or more. If you set a profit margin of $5,000 on one of these foreclosure properties, guess what's going to happen? Life's going to hit you in the face. Because trust me, when you buy one of these houses, it does not take long for life to happen and $5,000 to rear its ugly head. So you may want to build you in a cushion of at least $10,000, okay, on your profit. And that will equal your maximum bid. Now, bring more than one certified check. Let's use a nice, even, round number. Let's use $100,000. Let's say, for instance, and you say, Bobby, I don't have $100,000 to buy a property foreclosing to get a cashier set. Can you get partners? Can you get whatever you can do to come up with the money? But let's say, for instance, that you do have access to that. Would you bring one check for $100,000? No. And let me tell you from experience why. When you hand an attorney $100,000 and you bought a property for $80,000, do you know how long it takes him to make change? It takes a while. We'll send that to you in the mail. And you might get it 6 weeks later. And then you might have to call them again. So what I do is bring more than one check. Let's say I have determined that my maximum bid is $80,000. Then I might think that the initial opening bid is around 60. Then I would bring a check for 60. And I might bring a check for 10. And I might bring a check for 5 and 5. Does that make 80? My math ain't doing too good. Do you see what I'm saying? That way you can hand it to them in increments. And I get the cashier's check made payable to me, okay? Not to the lender, and make it payable to you, and then you sign it over. Do I need to say this? Don't bring cash. Can you imagine some, you know, person bringing $100,000? You just waiting to get robbed, right? Don't do that. If you are the successful bid, the first thing that you do, that's the way, I like it, Okay, do a little dance, that's fine. Celebrate. But get a receipt from the attorney with the exact time of the bid on it. Why do you want the exact time of the bid?
No problem later.
Right, no problem later. What if they file bankruptcy an hour after the foreclosure? You see what I'm saying? Time is kind of the essence here. You want everything to be notated. Call your insurance agent. Do you realize people that have lost a home through foreclosure have not a vested interest in the house sometimes? They will destroy the house sometimes. So you need to call an insurance agent. It may be burnt to the ground by the time you get there. Try, if at all possible, through your attorney's office to get title insurance. After you do it, you need to visit the property and tell the, I did not put homeowner, I told the tenant, okay, that there's a problem. Hey, we bought your house, here's what we need you to do. Now, should you just say, you're getting out of this house today, mister, you better handle it with kid's love, because this person now living in your house and will destroy your house. I try to make this a win-win situation if possible. I go ahead and tell them, look, legally, I must file a dispossessory. And I go ahead and do it. And I say a sheriff will come out and do that. It's the format. It's what happens. They'll, you know, send the paperwork out to begin dispossessory. But here's what I want you to do. I want you to be able to get out of the house on your own terms. I want to help you. Now, we bought a house, and I'm about to show you one that we bought. And when we bought it, the guy was angry, and he was upset at us. And he didn't understand how he had lost his house in foreclosure. And I told him, I said, look, if you'll work with me, I can get people over here to help you move. I said, we can get a moving truck, moving van, we'll get your stuff out. You know what? After we talked for a while, he was very appreciative when he knew he had to get out and he had to move on. So you treat people with respect. Can you imagine for one moment someone coming to your doorstep and say, I'm sorry, this is no longer your home. It's been purchased. Okay? So it's a very difficult situation. You got to handle it with kid gloves. Make a demand for the property. You need to go ahead and hand them a letter. Say, hey, I make demand for the property. It's part of the process of you actually filing the notice of the dispossessory action. And that needs to be in writing, written demand for property. I demand the property. It's ours. I demand that you turn over possession. If necessary, begin dispossessory action. I would probably do it anyway. Here is a property that Dan and I purchased in Carrollton, Georgia, 422 Anson Avenue. That was the house that we helped the guy get moved out on. I need to tell you a story about this house because this is very interesting. On this property, a gentleman had sold it to the present homeowner when we bought it. And when he sold it, the new guy that bought it got a regular first mortgage, but the original seller took out a second mortgage on the property. I mean, he did owner financing on the property, took a second, held a second. Everyone with me? Know what he did? He held a second. Well, time goes by, both are filed, and all of a sudden, Mr. Homeowner decides it's time for him to refinance the house, as many people will do. And he refinanced the house with a lender. The lender went in, put a $50,000 mortgage, I'm using round numbers, $50-something thousand dollar mortgage on the house, paid off the first mortgage, but failed to find in their title search the filed second mortgage of $13,000, the second. And that, while the first was paid off, the second was not, and any excess money over the first went to the homeowner. Time goes on. Mr. Owner Finance Dude is not getting payments on the property. The homeowner says, you should have been paid off. He was not paid off. It was not disclosed in the title search. Somebody messed up big time. So I want to give you this property for a second. Now, that original second mortgage of $13,000 has now become the first. The Countrywide mortgage, or whatever company it was, I think it was Countrywide, they came second. With the $50,000, now was now second, and the $13,000 was foreclosing. Y'all, I found this in my research, and I said, "Oh my!" I says to myself, "What do this mean?" Okay. And we went to the foreclosure sale having not a clue what was going to happen. We got to the foreclosure sale. Nobody was there. And we bought that property. Now, let me show you the details on this little house. We purchased it on January 4th in the year 2000. Who was at the foreclosure sale?
Nobody.
Crazy me, right? Nobody else. We purchased the house with legal fees and everything on that little $13,000 mortgage for $14,827. We sold it. I ain't talking about had a contract. I'm talking about sold the property on February 10th, 2000. We sold it. Listen to this. This is so good. I was nervous to death about this house. I was going, can this possibly stand? We sold it to a police officer in Carrollton, Georgia, on the Carrollton Police Force. That's who we sold it to, $13,900. I need to go a little further in the story. We sold it to him for $39,900, he and a partner. We get to the closing table on February 10th, and he's there with his business partner, but there's a man and a lady with them. And I was like, who the devil are they? We get in there, and guess what? We had a double closing. I sold it to them for $39,900. He sold it to them for like $54,000. And we did it all on February the 10th. So I had enough time to sell. It was such a good deal. I had enough time to sell. He resold it. I was like wanting to kick myself. You mean I could have sold it? But then again, I thought, you know what? Have you ever heard the saying that fat hogs get slaughtered first? So I wasn't out to make a killing. I was just out to get rid of it. Okay. The profit after my expenses, and y'all, when I say expenses, I didn't have no expenses. I mean, we did a little bit of advertising to sell it, and we didn't touch this house. We got such a wonderful deal on it. Our profit was $22,460.13. That wasn't bad for a month. Now, let me get up here and be totally honest with you. Do I find this every month? Mm-mm. I may go to a foreclosure auction or sale or look at something and go 3, 4, 5 months before I find another good deal, okay? It does take work. I'm not one to sit up here and tell you that this stuff is easy, but it's just a matter of looking. It being more perceptive in life. Looking for the opportunities that are around us. And if you're actually looking at this stuff, guess what? It will make itself known. And it doesn't take long to take the newspaper and to go through it. You can train a college kid, your college kid, your teenager, to go through and kind of look at this stuff. This isn't rocket science. If it was, I definitely couldn't do it. Let's talk about the final opportunity in real estate. And that is REO property, REOs, real estate owned, where a bank takes a property back. If there is no other bid, at the steps, the property, oh, you gave me all fives. Oh, I'm sorry, I wasn't supposed to say that.
She's got a four.
I got a four. Okay. If there is no other bid, the property goes back to the lender. Trust me, banks and lending institutions are not in the property management business. They do not want to take these properties back. Now, they're horrible property managers. I told you about the swimming pool. Are they going to do repairs? Seldom, right? They're not going to do anything. Will they even cut the grass? It's tough getting it done, isn't it? Okay? They usually don't do upkeep or make repairs to the property. I mean, they really don't. It's just in horrible, horrible shape. It's not good. I told you, in the eyes of federal regulators, for banks to be holding REO properties, and they don't want to take the properties back. There is one major exception that I need to make you aware of. And that major exception is when an individual has provided owner financing on a property. You see, people who are in the business of selling property and doing it on owner financing actually hope that the homeowner loses it at some point. You see, because they may have got $5,000 down, and they'll pay a year or two, and then they move out, and what are they going to do? They're going to sell it again to someone, and they're going to get $5,000, and they're going to, you know, maybe do a little paint, a little carpet cleaning, and do it all over again. So they're in the business of doing these properties over and over and over, and they want them back. So if you see a security deed that is in the name of an individual, you need to be careful. Okay, because when you go there, they're going to want it back. Let me tell you a quick story. There is an attorney in Carrollton, Georgia, that is one of them. I don't know about y'all. I try to be myself. You know, I am who I am. But there's a guy, I mean, he's just one of these. He just walks like this. Oh, man, got that nose up in the air, you know, thinking he's something. And he represents a guy who is a big builder of houses, and then this builder owner finances the properties, and this is his attorney. And I remember seeing one time in the foreclosure paper that this builder was foreclosing on the property, and it was a good deal. And we went to the foreclosure steps to bid on this property, but there was something strange. We saw the attorney come up to the steps, and people were out there, and he went on into the courthouse. And he kept coming back and looking through the window to see if people were on the steps. And we were always on the steps. And every time he'd come out and he'd peer around, he'd see us out there, and he'd go back in. Y'all, this went on for a long time. He was waiting for us not to be there because he didn't want us to bid on the property that his client was foreclosing on. Well, I said, look, this can go on all day. So I did what any good red-blooded American would have done. I went across the street to the First Baptist Church of Carrollton, Georgia, and hunkered down like a squirrel in the bushes. And all of a sudden, we waited for the right moment. I mean, I'm saying we were hiding in the bushes of the First Baptist Church. We went over there, and all of a sudden, here he comes. He looks out there. He doesn't see anybody. And he starts reading the foreclosure thing. Buddy, as fast as a fat man can trot. 17 minutes later, I was at the I run over to the courthouse, and he just looks at us like, we're a bunch of fools. And we was like, we didn't think he's going to do this. And he just kept on reading his little thing, you know. Anyway, he says, my client authorizes me to bid X amount of dollars. I said, we bid $1 above what your client authorized you to bid. He says, my client has authorized me to bid $1,000 above what you bid. And he did the exact numbers. And I said, well, me and my buddy bids $1 above that $1,000 above that dollar that I bid, above what your client authorized you to bid. He went up this time to $2,000. And I was like, it's still a good deal. So we bid a dollar above the $2,000, above the dollar of the $2,000. You know what I'm saying? We just kept doing like that for a while. Finally, he jumped it up $5,000. I said, man, I know you a real estate attorney. And I know you real smart. And I just, you know, here I am. I'm just Bobby. But I said, let me tell you something. You realize that any penny above what goes on the opening bid is going to go first to any other liens, junior liens that is on this property, right? It would go to a second mortgage or to a third mortgage first. And if there are no other liens on this property, which there were not, then any amount above this bid, including your $1,000, $2,000, and $5,000, is going to be going to the person who is losing the property. I know that. I wish to God I had followed that through. I can't even remember the property, because I would bet you that that poor homeowner never saw that $5,000, $7,000, $8,000. It's just a very unscrupulous way of doing things, okay? Tell you what we started doing. Anytime this guy would come to a foreclosure and it was something we were interested in, we never bought one with him, but we would, I probably shouldn't have done it, but we video recorded him. You know? I wanted evidence on this guy. But anyway, I hadn't had any dealings with him since then. But you got to watch people out there. So individuals who have provided owner's financing and are foreclosing, you got to watch that. They want the property back. Now, they are the fewest number of opportunities for investors because they're the least in number of all the opportunities. But it's still a good opportunity. They're easy to locate because they're listed through who? You find folks, right? It's a regular purchase. A closing with an attorney, they do a full title search, and they're normally purchased as is, aren't they? That's what they're normally offered at. And they normally require proof of funds. They want to know that you have the money. You got to get an approval letter. They ask you to sign goofy book size addendums, 22 pages or so on a Fannie Mae. It's just incredible all the stuff you have to sign. Your profit potential may be limited on the resale within a certain amount of time. Let me tell you this quickly. We bought a Fannie Mae property in that same neighborhood of that dog house I showed you. Remember the home office and mother-in-law suite? We bought a property in there, Fannie Mae. It was like a 5-bedroom, 2-bath house, huge house, okay? And they started it out. Fannie Mae took it back as a foreclosure, and it went started out at $139,000. And I said, well, they're crazy. That's $100,000 properties in there. It's crazy. You know, the same one that was for $59,000. They went on a little while. My agent called me. He said, Bobby, they had dropped that house down to $100,000. And I said, well, that's probably getting close to value. They went on a little further a couple months later. They dropped the thing down to $68,000. And I said, now we're getting interested. He called me not long before. We didn't have time for an offer. He said, Bobby, the thing is at $54,000. And I said, we're putting a bid in today. We bought that property. Do you know what deed restriction that they required us to put on the deed of that property? That if we resold that property within 6 months, we could only be limited to a profit of $10,000. Okay? So you need to be aware of that some of these, especially the government agencies that are taking these properties back, that they may actually limit your profit. Now, it was a neighborhood that was declining in value. I didn't want to rent it. I didn't want to own a rental on that thing. I wanted to sell it. So I sold it and made a $10,000 profit. Is that okay? Yeah. You know what I did? I marketed the property better than Fannie Mae marketed it, right? I cared more. $10,000 to me meant a lot. To them, it meant nothing. I properly marketed it, sold that, made a $10,000 profit. Incidentally, someone asked me at a class yesterday, Bobby, why don't you just sell it to another LLC and then let them resell it? The 6 month applies to anybody in the chain after, okay? Anybody's got to run that 6 month time frame, okay? Guy finally sold it for $109,000. That we sold it to. That's what he did with it. A gold mine of REOs is the MLS service, no doubt about it. I have my agents put in search parameters. Here's the words I'm looking for and searching for in MLS. Bank owned, REO, foreclosure, handyman special, right? Something that needs work, investor special. I search by area. I don't want houses in Atlanta. I want stuff in my area. And I search by price range. Here's a sample email he sends me, and you ought to be sending your investors. Get a list of investor emails. Send these things out. I don't know what service he used to do this, but he sends out this beautiful three-bedroom, two-and-a-half-bath house, brick house for $69,000 in Douglasville, Georgia. Look at this. Looks like HUD dropped the price. The old listed price, the original list price was what? $105,000. What is it now? Lenders want to get rid of these things. They will drop the price. Okay? Additional resources for you. Just got some website, homesales.gov. You know about HUD.gov. Those are sites for looking at REOs owned by various governmental entities. BidSelect.com for Georgia HUD listings. What is it, the HUD thing? Is it PIMCO? What do they call themselves? Yeah. WilliamsAuction.com has a listing of auctions. They sell REO properties. Y'all, we went to one of these. These guys come up in black Escalades. Okay? They come up in black Escalades. They put down all these computer equipment. They got these little microphones and all this stuff. And they start auctioning the property. And we went to an auction on one of them. It's amazing. Here's what they were doing. Hey, how many high? And we signed up for the thing. We signed up to bid. And we sit there, and they give you a little number, do all this kind of stuff, you know. Well, you know, here I go. He goes, and we was bidding against some other guy, you know. And finally, it got up, and I looked at Dan, and I said, man, I said, we just letting him have it now. I said, he's outbid us, and he's going to get the house. I said, I don't think we can do it anymore. Well, anyway, he kept going on and looking at everybody, having high. Going high. Oh! He looked over at us and said, let me get y'all's information. I said, what you talking about? He said, well, y'all bought that house. To this day, I still don't know what body movement it was that I had that got me that house. But we ended up getting it anyway. All right. Two keys to successful investing. You've heard it from any good investor. These are your two keys that you got to do. You got to see a bunch of houses. If you anticipate on buying something like this and going out and see three houses and go, I didn't find nothing, I'm giving up. Well, you need to give up. You got to see a lot of them. And finally, you got to make a lot of offers. Make a lot of offers. If you make offers on properties, guess what? Have you ever seen someone make an offer on property and get it? And you say to yourself, if I know they would accept that, I would have bought it myself. You've said that, right? Make a lot of offers. You'd be surprised. Quick word to you. Why in the devil aren't y'all buying them? Some of you are. If you're an agent, hey, you want to make more sales with short sales and foreclosures? Buy them yourself. Investors are your friends. They'll make low offers. They'll be a pain in the rear, but they'll use you to buy. They'll use you to sell. They'll give you repeat business. Get started now. Get today's newspaper or whenever newspaper. Get a newspaper with the foreclosures in them. Go to next month's auction. Try your hand at some research. Contact some homeowners. Get a list of REO properties. Look at a minimum of three. If you find a deal, the money will follow. Y'all, make an offer. I will leave you with one final thing today. There is a German proverb that I love to quote. It means a lot to me. And it basically says this. If you begin to weave, God will provide the thread. Weaving when there's no thread in your hand. Doing something when you're not seeing sales at hand. Is everyone with me? Doing something and training yourself and learning something new when everything is slow. That's what you guys are doing. Y'all, I need to tell you something. My wife and I underwent years of fertility treatments to no avail. I mean years. tens of thousands of dollars. Nothing happened, nothing worked. Finally, after all the work, Beth finally got pregnant. And we were so excited. A few weeks later, she called me. She said, "Bobby, had a miscarriage." So devastated. We had spent so much money on these things. We said, "Finally, let's do it one more time." Beth's numbers, as measured by the doctor, were really good. My numbers were superior. They can measure that stuff. Who knows how? And we were so excited, and we said, "Man, we just know this time we're going to get pregnant." One out of five couples has trouble conceiving a child. We just knew it was going to happen. One day I was on the interstate, Beth called. She said, "Bobby, bad news. I'm not pregnant." She was crying. I was angry as all get out. Make a long story short, we began to weave when there was no thread. We began the process of adoption, which I would highly recommend to anybody. We underwent this process, and I remember we were trying to adopt from Guatemala, and they were changing the laws down there, and we got a call on our anniversary. We were heading down to the beach, and the adoption agency said, "You must select a baby today." Beth had emailed me a picture of a beautiful little baby a few weeks before, but she said, "Bobby, we're too early in the process to get that baby." She said, "Wouldn't it be great if we could get that baby?" We went to the thing, and they sent us pictures. Guess what? This baby was still available. Do you know why this beautiful baby was still available when there were hundreds of people looking to adopt babies? The little picture of her that they had, her little eye was crossed in the picture. Nobody wanted that baby. On our anniversary, we said, "That's our baby." To make a long story short, 9 months later, 9 months later, this little baby came home to be with us. Her name is Abigail Elizabeth Gaines. She is the light of my world. Anyway, do something. Do something. Begin to weave. God will provide the thread. I want to... Her daddy knows real estate. I want to thank you guys for coming. You've been a great crowd, and God bless you.